This is Sound and Query, the Southern Illinois University Medical Library's podcast. I'm Lydia Howes, your host and one of many friendly librarians here. Tune in for information about the School of Medicine's activities and research, library events and resources, and anything else that we deem interesting. Last week was an exciting week for us. The library is one of the first libraries ever to host the National Library of Medicine's newest traveling exhibition. Pick Your Poison, Intoxicating Pleasures and Medical Prescriptions. This interesting display focuses on the history of five mind-altering chemicals: alcohol, tobacco, marijuana, opium, and cocaine, and how their use and social acceptance have changed over time. In addition to the exhibit, we've delved into our own special collections to find materials discussing these five substances. We've created a Spotify playlist of songs that we hope you'll listen and add to, and have even selected some research posters from students and faculty at the School of Medicine that we'll be displaying alongside the exhibit. We hope you'll visit and check all of it out. Over the course of the Pick Your Poison exhibition, Sound and Query will be speaking to several of the authors of the posters on display. Today I'm joined by Dr. Wiley Jenkins, the Science Director of the Population and Health Science Program at Southern Illinois University School of Medicine. Good afternoon, Wiley. We're excited to have you with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Today we'll be discussing your poster, E-Cigarette Use Among Current Smokers, Relationships with Quit Attempts, Quit Success, Perceived Norms, and Perceived Risk, alongside the Pick Your Poison exhibit. Thanks for sharing your work with us.
Again, it's my pleasure.
Okay, great. Could you quickly describe your poster in 30 seconds or less for those listening who haven't yet seen it?
This poster is a result of work we did for the Illinois Department of Public Health through a grant they funded to us to examine the epidemiology of electronic cigarette use among smokers and also some aspects of smokeless tobacco and the interaction of the three products. And we were particularly interested in what were the factors that modified or mitigated the use of those products and how they co-occurred.
E-cigarettes have been a hot topic for the past several years. Why would you say that is?
Honestly, it's a very new thing, and people are unsure what to make of it. The state of Illinois and the nation as a whole has put a tremendous amount of effort into smoke-free workplace laws and other types of things to protect the health of individuals from secondhand smoke, and also to change the social norms of our community so that smoking is no longer accepted like it used to be. The ultimate goal then is to eliminate the voluntary smoking of cigarettes to increase health and wellness for not only the smokers, but also their families and friends. E-cigarettes are perceived by some to be a threat on multiple fronts. One, the exact mechanism of action has not been studied, where they vaporize glycerol and vegetable oils and a few other minor components with nicotine and inhale that directly into the lungs. While on the face of it, none of those particular components are perceived to be dangerous, they have not been studied in that particular format of delivery. So that has some people worried that we do not want to jump the gun and say it is safe before it actually has been subjected to further scrutiny. Another, perhaps more troubling reason people are concerned about e-cigarette use is the thought that e-cigarettes may be a way to get around smoke-free workplace laws. The idea that instead of having to go outside to smoke or go to your car, which is an inconvenience and may in fact drive some people to quit, people now can smoke at work, perhaps, or go places where they would not otherwise be able to smoke, and in that sense, get through the day. And so the impetus or the burden of quitting would be less upon them, and smoke-free work laws would have less of an effect on quit attempts and quit success by some individuals. And then finally, the third facet, and perhaps one of the most troubling, are the flavors that are available. And so much like flavors in cigarettes were outlawed a number of years ago because they were deemed as a gateway for children to initiate cigarette smoking, many anti-smoking advocates fear the same thing here, that the ability to get strawberry or raspberry flavoring for your electronic cigarettes will entice children and adolescents to begin e-cigarette use. And e-cigarette use is not without addiction. It does contain nicotine, which is one of the more powerfully addictive substances known.
Okay, so it'd be like selling
dangerous candy to the kids.
Potentially, yes. Nicotine is not without its side effects, and it is horribly addictive. And so the fear is outright that this could be a gateway from electronic cigarette to full-blown cigarette smoking. And so there are multiple conversations underway at the state level and in multiple states to outright ban the sale of flavorings for electronic cigarettes.
Okay. Obviously, there is a lot of public interest in e-cigarettes, but this topic is a little bit different from what a lot of your past research has been focused on. What led you to start studying tobacco and e-cigarette use?
It was somewhat a circuitous route to come from sexually transmitted diseases to electronic cigarettes. Over the past couple of years, I've transitioned my work more towards cancer, which is a much greater and immediate burden in central and southern Illinois than sexually transmitted diseases. And it was actually through conversations with the State Department of Health on a much more cancer-related topic that they mentioned that they had an opportunity to do some research into the epidemiology of not only smokeless tobacco, which was the subject of my previous grant proposal, but also on cigarettes and electronic cigarettes and how they work together. And so it was more serendipity that this particular project came about as much as anything else.
Okay. So once you heard about this grant and applied for it and received it, what steps did you take to collect the data that eventually became this poster?
We did not, in the grand scheme of things, have that much money. And so we decided to focus our resources. And again, our initial interest was smokeless tobacco use. And now we're incorporating electronic cigarettes and smoking. And so we thought amongst ourselves is that where might be the single greatest concentration of smokeless tobacco users, as well as cigarettes and e-cigarettes, in one place that we could think of in central southern Illinois? And being in Springfield, the State Fair came to mind. And so we knew that that is a venue that is not terribly expensive to attend or to set up a booth. And so we thought that given there are 900,000 visitors to State Fair every year, and that approximately 20% of Illinois residents smoke, that if we were able to get even a small fraction of the people who smoke and attend to do our survey, that we could meet our sample size requirements within a period of 1 week.
Mm-hmm. How did that turn out?
No plan survives first contact with the enemy, is the old saying. And we quickly found that there were limitations on advertisement, on the numbers of people actually pursuing and going by our booth. And so we did not actually meet our goal in spite of 10, 12-hour days of recruiting individuals. Those are very long days. State Fair is a wonderful place to visit, to have fun. But working a booth takes a fair amount of dedication, I must say.
What would you say your biggest challenge in this research project was?
I would say the biggest challenge in this research was getting enough people to know about our project to participate. We offered a $10 cash incentive, which is almost unheard of. And for a lot of people, especially those who go to the State Fair, and this $10 is a worthwhile amount of money to do a survey. Our problem with recruiting individuals to do the survey was that we were not allowed to actually advertise on the fair grounds. We had to rely solely upon people walking by our booth and becoming engaged enough to actually find out what we're doing. And if you've ever walked by booths with people trying to catch your eye and you ignore them because you don't want to be bothered, you get an idea of the barriers we face to actually get the attention of people, at least for 20 or 30 seconds, to let them know this is just a survey, no personal information, and we can make it worth your while with a $10 incentive at the end. So I say recruitment was far and away the biggest challenge that we had.
Okay, so you collected your data, you started crunching the numbers, and were any of the findings surprising or unexpected, particularly interesting?
Honestly, we were not terribly sure what to expect. This is kind of a new topic for us. And again, electronic cigarettes especially are fairly new in the grand scheme of things. And there is not a tremendous amount of literature and research done on that topic. One of the initial surprises I think we found was the number of dual users, especially among smokers. By dual user, I mean those who both smoke and use electronic cigarettes. And so we found that almost 52% of all the individuals who smoked also use e-cigarettes. Not only was that surprising for such a high proportion, but the number of smokers who used electronic cigarettes did not differ by gender. So the same number of male smokers use e-cigarettes as female smokers did not differ by income, by race, by education, by any factor we looked at, it was always right about 52%, no matter how we broke it down. That was rather surprising for us because those variables typically are splitting demographics. That they go one way or the other, but they are identical essentially throughout the study.
Yeah, that is definitely unexpected.
Some of the other things we are interested in is trying to determine, are there community norms that influence smoking or electronic cigarette use? Are there perceived harms that people have that either prevent them or allow them to use e-cigarettes? And how does the use of electronic cigarettes impact future or past quit attempts? I mean, those are very relevant to the initial question we had. And again, we were surprised essentially by the finding of nothing, that the use of electronic cigarettes did not vary by perceived social norms of the community or friends, that, and again, this is among smokers, electronic cigarette use did not vary by perceived harms. It did not impact, use of electronic cigarettes did not change the frequency of past quit attempts, did not change the frequency of future planned quit attempts, and did not change people's perception of their ability to quit if they tried. So it seemed to have really no impact whatsoever on likelihood of quitting, or was not based in any way that we could tell upon social or community norms or the feelings of family and friends.
So what do you think that means in a real world application?
Well, it's not really sure. We are still analyzing the data to try to determine some of the principal components that define the use of each of these products, and define how different social norms and different community norms impact the use of these products, as well as perceived harms and perceived risks. So a lot of the data is out there. As far as practical use for this data, we're not quite to that stage where we can be definitive. Mm-hmm. We have done some other work, and we found, looking at some of the factors that contribute outright to smoking and cigarette use and electronic cigarette use and smokeless tobacco use. So what does the impact of the electronic cigarette use among smokers mean as far as policy implications? At this point, we're unsure. We still need to crunch a few more of the numbers, and we probably need to do other studies in other venues as well, because this was a convenience sample, not without biases, given that the majority of people are from Sangamon County or a couple of counties around here. Other work we've done is examining all of our participants, not just those who smoke. This initial work I've described is really the use of electronic cigarettes amongst those who smoke. And we were also interested in what are the factors that actually contribute to product use in the first place. So what types of things are most important in predicting whether or not an individual will use smokeless tobacco, will use electronic cigarettes, or use cigarettes? And it turns out that the factors influencing those products are actually quite different. That was surprising to us as well. For example, two of the biggest factors impacting whether or not someone used e-cigarettes, and we did, it's called multivariate logistic regression for this, a hierarchical model of different levels. The two most important factors were some college education. And so the level of college education impacted e-cigarette use, as well did they care what their family thought. Not friends, not community, but family. And so those were really two of the biggest factors that we found. Smokeless tobacco use, on the other hand, two of the biggest factors important were male gender, which may not be surprising, and what your family thinks. So not do you care what your family thinks, but what do they think outright? And so we have a different perception there. With e-cigarettes, the important thing is that the individual actually cares what people think. And we tried to make that distinction. What does your family think about this product? And then another question was, do you care what they think about this? Because that has implications for how we design interventions. So for smokeless tobacco, male gender was far and away the biggest one. And then what family thinks, not whether you care about it, but what family thinks, is the second one. Finally, for smoking, we found a couple of important variables. One is male gender, again, is very highly correlated or important to predicting that, as well as high school education and college education. That's it. Nothing to do with social norms, nothing to do with perceived harms, nothing to do whether your family cares or whether you care what they think. Only college education, high school education, male gender. So very different predictors of use by the different products. And we found that surprising as well. And I would say, just to kind of wrap that portion up, the implications for this are fairly significant when designing an intervention. Mm-hmm. Many of the smoke-free laws have been very effective in changing social norms, but we still find that being male gender is one of the biggest consistent predictors of smoking, for our survey at least. And so the implication for interventions is that we need to identify something to do with being male as being an important factor, that smoking is not part of being male, or that being male is also being healthy. So those are the kind of implications. Whereas with e-cigarette use, they're more interested in what the community thinks, and they care what their family thinks. And so those are different types of aspects of interventions.
Mm-hmm. So knowing about these differences could potentially help to develop intervention programs that are more effective?
Sure. Okay. The ability to tailor messages to essentially the weak points in a person's armor for product use is bound to be more effective. And so this adds some data to that, that we don't need to come up with interventions that just sound good, but are actually tailored to the aspects of a person's use that are amenable to change or influence.
I understand that you're currently working on a paper that is also drawing from your findings.
That's correct. And the paper that we're working on right now is dealing a lot with the different social norms at the community, family, and individual level, and the perceived harms and risks stratified by the different products. So we're looking at how do perceived norms and perceived risks vary by product, but also by demographics. And so what we would be interested in learning there is such things as, does the community norm, the norm being the generally agreed upon set of operating behaviors for that community, does that influence, say, e-cigarette smoking, and is that influence equal across all categories? And we would expect that to actually vary somewhat substantially. For example, smokeless tobacco use is not nearly as widely accepted in communities, at least in Springfield. You go to other communities, and it may be much more accepted than, say, electronic cigarette use. So identifying which social norms are important is really kind of key, and how does that vary? We would also expect that to differ by gender. For example, smokeless tobacco use is generally more favorably accepted amongst males than females. But again, that is not always the case.
I'll look forward to reading your paper when it comes out. Thank you so much for joining us, Wiley.
It's my pleasure to be here. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thanks for listening to Sound and Query. For more information about the library, its services and resources, or to learn about future events and podcasts, please visit our website at www.siumed.edu/lib.